if I start feeling angry, if I start feeling overwhelmed, if I'm stuck, oh, I'm shitty. Ah, oh, what's the point? No one loves me, you know? Go, like I said, go eat a cheeseburger. Like, it's fine. Well, I'm a little bit rough around the edges this morning. I was out very late dancing to like old school funk music
at
at this thing called Funky Good Time here in Nashville, the first Saturday of every month. Just these killer DJs come in and they just spin like old school funk vinyl.
Oh, that was like our wedding night.
Oh,
we were curating the playlist and Justin and I were both like, no, this is exactly what we need, like 70s, 80s funk.
It's the best. And it's like, it was so overwhelmingly positive and fun and musically like super heavy. Like, this music is incredible,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a musician's hang. Like, everyone is, there are musicians there, but everyone's there to just like be joyful and dance. And it's a great combination of
amazing.
Like hipsters and old heads and musos and just people like rolling in.
Which is basically
from
Nashville in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a wonderful kind of like just blending of scenes, because a lot, you know, you don't get that here all the time. It can be like pretty clicky and kind of compartmentalized.
Yeah.
But that night
Where
was really
it at?
Fun. It's at the Five Spot. At the Five
oh
Spot.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's called Funky Good Times?
Funky Good Times. Funky Good
oh,
Times.
Man. Yeah.
That was good for the soul. So if I have a sultry baritone today, that's the reason.
So I wrote you an introduction.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to read it, okay? Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay, so Trevor Larkin is my guest today. He is a guitar player, multi-instrumentalist, producer extraordinaire, as well as a singer-songwriter who's been sharing his music consistently over the past 6 years, unless I'm wrong. He released his debut solo EP, Free From Me, in 2016, followed by 8 singles, which is crazy. And Trevor just released his new album, Let Tears Be Diamonds, last month. You may also know him from collaborating with Alan Stone for many years, touring and recording as the band's electric guitar player. Also, to me, you are an admirable balance between creativity and dedication in who you are and also as an artist and songwriter. I truly think that when I met you, I was like, this guy has a lot to say. He's motivated. He's doing a lot of things. Your email newsletter, you were in a band. You were also writing your own stuff. And you just, like, from where I was standing, it always seemed like you had something going on. So, yeah, that's you.
That's a very sweet,
in my opinion.
that's a very sweet introduction. And it's not going to get any better from here. So we can really just shut it down. Oh, that's great. This
but
guy's
everything
interesting.
Everything was correct, right?
Everything was correct. Yeah, it's funny. Perfect. It's funny. Yeah. That. Wow. Yeah, Free From Me did come out in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't realized that it was, had been 8 singles since then. But that mm-hmm. but that makes sense, I guess. Because I'm just I'm counting now, because there's 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I mean, there was 4 singles since 2020 leading up to this EP.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were 1, 2, yeah. So at least 6 singles in between
you
the Free
a lot
From
of
EP.
Music, my dude.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that 2016 up until lockdown was still like height of like the Alan Stone project's like activity and powers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really just kind of, I had no, well, I still don't have a plan for this music, but like, especially back then.
I don't think anybody really has a plan, you know?
No one does, and I'm sure we'll
even
talk.
Even the people that have teams around them. I don't know. I think that those teams are just making stuff up, kind of, and we're all just flying by the seat of our pants.
I have a lot of interactions with those teams in like various capacities, and
they just kind of say things, you know?
You know, that's, I mean, you're
just
right.
Just follow
you're
up
right.
and...
You're right. And I'm sure we'll go
circle
into...
Circle back.
I'm sure we'll go into more, all the buzzwords, right? I'm sure we'll go into more depth with all that stuff, but so it was really just kind of like catharsis and an outlet in between Alan Stone tours and Alan Stone records, because I was really heavily involved on the creative side with the Alan thing, but like, as with any sort of like mm-hmm. band or collaborative dynamic, you have to kind of play team basketball, and like my job in that band was to provide, you know, some riffs and progressions and like some arrangement ideas basically. And so
mm-hmm.
any aspiration I had to, I mean, obviously, I'm not going to sing in I'm not going to sing the lead vocals.
But you were a part of the band's writing process for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Correct? Yeah. And that,
like,
was,
you were really involved in the songwriting. You know, aside from your own solo stuff, in other, like, you know, in other types of projects and collaborative environments.
Yeah. Yeah. And the solo stuff was just a really nice way to balance everything out, because it was, you know, from the ground up, you know, kind of my tunes, my lyrics, my singing for what that's worth, yeah, and like my melodies and the whole thing.
It's worth a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I honestly think that as musicians, no matter kind of what position we are in the music industry professionally, we need that like solo outlet. Because, you know, no matter what you do, if you're like an instrumentalist or a songwriter or a singer or even like a drummer, it all started from like you. Mm-hmm. It all started from coming out of the core of who you are.
Right.
And I think that it's really important to be able to, like, yeah, like you said, it's like an outlet and getting back to just you and being able to let that out.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. No one project satisfies everything. No one project checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
And I think it's essential to have that balance and have different outlets for different aspects of your creativity. Otherwise, and I've seen it happen so many times, I'm sure you have as well, these resentments start to kind of come up. Yeah, you know, like resentments start to come out and ego kind of starts to come into play and, oh, I should be doing this or I should be doing that. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're part of a project that becomes successful, because clearly the reason that it's successful is because you are a genius. And
yes, that's exactly that's the only reason, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. You know, and so so clearly everything I say is correct and everything I contribute creatively is the best idea and all this kind of, I mean,
you're sounding like Kanye right now.
Oh, Jesus Christ, please. No. Yeah. And with with the Allen thing, it never got like that extreme. But, you know, for me, I found there was definitely a desire to branch out and do other stuff, like being part of the project was you know, because like that iteration of the Allen Stone project, there's a lot of me in there, and the way that I approached that gig as a guitar player and as a band member was very unique, and I'm proud of that, and that's very cool. But like we were talking about, it still isn't really like my tunes per se, and it was and for some people it's not important to get that. They either don't have that side of their creativity or it's not important for them to express that. But I noticed for myself that I was starting to kind of, I was really starting to kind of ruminate on it. It was becoming a thing.
Yeah.
And and so, yeah, so like 2016 was the first, and it's so funny, the guy I worked on that EP with, this brilliant engineer, musician, producer named Jeremy Hatcher, is now nominated for like 1,000 Grammys for having worked on
Your EP?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. No, for having worked, he was one of the main engineers on Harry's House, the new Harry Styles record.
Really?
And I think he's nominated for like having worked on a tune on the Lizzo record too. So he's,
that's amazing.
So he's crushing it in LA. So it's funny to
have
like charted, you know, his progress since then is really good. And he was just as gifted when we were working together on that project as he is now. But it's just funny how, you know, it's what we do is episodic and it sort of reveals itself over time.
You know, I do think from afar, I witness you collaborating so much with such talented people and surrounding yourself with really incredible people. And that's something that I notice.
Like yourself, by the way, and like Justin, just real quick, a shout out to your magnificent, beautiful, handsome, splendid husband. I know, which really you're saying that to make it all about me just highlights the fact, my loneliness, right? And like my sad, solitary, deserted island of an existence.
But
it's been a wonderful to work with Justin on all of this artwork for like these singles and like the animation.
It has been, he's incredible. And it's like, like I said, it's like, you are such a collaborative person, and even the way that we met, like, it feels very comfortable to just sit down and talk with you, because that's also how we met. Like, you open yourself up to just a community of, you know, incredible creative people in your work and in your life. And I could tell that from the moment we met, or even before, when you were like, let's just go grab a coffee and, you know, talk about the music industry or whatever, which was so like such a such a warm welcome after Justin and I moved to Nashville and basically knew nobody.
Sure.
Except for like sure. Berkeley friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that I notice. Yeah. Like I said, in your work. And yes, my husband has, I think he's illustrated every single cover and the new album cover, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Like all the tracks on the new album.
Everything that I've released since 2020, he's done the artwork and in some cases the animation for, which is so wonderful.
Yeah. 'Cause
I mean, I think it is, you know, it's interesting, and I'm sure you deal with this as well. And I think everyone kind of creating art at the moment deals with this, where it's like this juxtaposition versus juxtaposition of it being like an entirely like solitary kind of endeavor and then bringing people in. And
yeah,
so it's
you
such,
need to for oh, your own sanity.
You absolutely do. And it's such a joy and a relief to just know that like my go-to visual artist is Justin, is Hound. And so
it's so sweet.
It takes all the ambiguity off the tip. It's just like anything that I do, I'm just going to send it to Justin. And what's beautiful about Justin and all great collaborators and all great creative forces is like, I don't give him any prompt whatsoever. I just say, listen to the music, and he mm-hmm. sends me back a sketch, and I'm like, this is great.
That's amazing.
I think the only input I've ever given him to like change something, quote unquote, is I think for the Lover I Can't artwork, originally I was wearing a hat. And I was like, you know.
You were like, I don't wear hats.
Or it was just like, you know, maybe I look a little bit more, less like Sherlock Holmes and more like me being an asshole. And he's like, got it. And that was it. That was the only change.
That is hilarious. And I do love that. And I really admire that because I am very specific in my work. Yeah. I mean, I'm specific in my life. I have OCD and it's something that I need to kind of push through. But I've been working recently in my creativity and being a little bit more ambiguous. Mm-hmm. With my songs and with my music and my branding, because it can really cause, like, it can take the fun away from creating when you're like, I want it to be exactly like this.
It can, it's a very different relationship with the process. I mean, when you're working, yeah. Obviously it's not like a strictly binary thing, right? It's not like a ones mm-hmm. and zeros thing, but like,
it's very non-binary.
But I mean, do you find that when you're working on your music and your art, you have the vision in your head, you know, like I can plot it out, I'm going to actualize it, and then you do it and it's done and it's great? Or are you more of like a trial and error type of person?
I definitely am a throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks kind of person,
mm-hmm.
which is contrasting to my very specific nature of exactly how I want something to be. So yeah. I think it's trial and error, but if it doesn't sound exactly the way that I want it to sound, you know, yeah. I go back. But I've been trying to work on that. In my last release, Wishbone, I worked with a producer where I basically was like, I'm coming into this project wanting to challenge myself and, you know, like go outside of the box of what I usually would do.
Mm-hmm.
And he really helped me with that. And like, you know, there are parts of that song that are so amazing and are not exactly what I imagined for them to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he just brought so much to the song that, it really pushed me outside of my comfort zone.
Right.
And I'm realizing that like, yeah, like you bringing your song to Justin and saying like, create something inspired by this. Mm-hmm.
It's
incredible.
I mean, I think it's just an extension. I mean, one, it's, you know, because I respect him as an artist. I respect you as an artist. So any sort of interactions or collaboration, it would be with that kind of freedom. But I think it also is just an extension of the way that I approach my own thing. I never have an idea, ever.
No.
I never have a vision.
I love that.
I have no idea how anything's going to go at all. And so,
like starting from scratch, like before you even have a song, or are you talking about like producing your own stuff?
Sort of all of the above, but
or
like
just in general.
Yeah, I mean, I rarely have any idea how to do anything.
Yeah,
but like, you know, say for example, I mean, just this EP, Let Tears Be Diamonds, as an example. None of these songs, it was really just like, okay, I have, you know, maybe I have like a voicemail of a demo or like an idea. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how I'm going to embellish it. I have no vision of how it's going to, I don't hear it in my head and be like, this is it. It's just, you just mm-hmm. start, and then you start fucking around. You go, oh, well, that's a weird sound, or that's a cool blip bloop, or like, oh, that's a mistake. I like that. And then that's, yes, and then you build beautiful. Upon that, and you build upon that. Like you were singing a little bit of Lover I Can't, I think, before we started.
Yeah.
And that's a great example of like, that song, there was no plan at all when I kind of took it from voice memo land to opening up a session to start working on it. I was fucking around with arpeggiators and there was that boom, beep, boom, boom, beep, boop, boop, yeah. little thing in the intro. And I was like, all right, let's just see what happens.
That's cool.
And you just layer and layer and layer and layer and layer. There was no bridge at the time. And the bridge was totally reactionary to all of the mistakes that I had made in the production of the verses and choruses. And then the visuals, I have no idea how anything's going to look, but I trial and error is sort of exclusively the way that my limited mm-hmm. intellect and talent is able to kind of make sense of this stuff. And so, but within that, and I'm sure you feel the same way about your own art, that you develop a level of proficiency and competence in everything that you do, that mm-hmm. if you do ultimately want something to sound a certain way, or like this needs to look like this, you can just do that. And so, and I feel that way about myself. So if I'm going to ask someone to contribute, it's almost never with a real prompt other than listen to the music or, you know, experience the art and react to it. Because I know that, like, you know, like I'll have other guitar players play stuff on my recordings. Mm-hmm. And I love that because if I want, you know, I can play the guitar. If I'm hearing a part, I'll just do it. But if I want this other musician to contribute, it's because I want their voice and I want their interpretation. And so that's kind of across. Oh, sorry. See, I'm double fisting the beverages right now. I've got the I've got the cappuccino over here. I've got the water, and I had like a protein cookie. So it's a gong show. It's a nightmare universe.
You can burp
in the intestinal system. Podcast. Okay. Good.
That is great. But it is. I do love when I walk into the house, and you know, Justin kind of just does his own thing, and so I don't always know exactly like what projects he has on the go, but sometimes I'll walk into the house and I'll hear an unreleased Trevor Larkin song, and then he's just on his iPad
sketching away,
doing something, and I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, oh, Trevor sent me another song, and which has been such a blessing for me to be able to come home and hear your songs before they you know, sometimes are even finished. So truly, like, a lot of the songs on your new album have been stuck in my head for months before the release. But it is interesting you talking about your writing process. So when you write these days, it sounds like it's voice memo land, which is a very scary, dark place
sure.
for us songwriters.
Sure.
So you come from voice memo land and immediately take that to your computer and stick your ideas into a DAW. Is that how you write, or do you have like fully formed ideas that are songs that you've played on the guitar and, you know, taken a voice memo of, or is it just like you create a foundation, you know, while producing and then write over top of that?
The process has really evolved since lockdown, because, you know, my project over lockdown was basically to get more proficient with like engineering myself and mixing my own stuff and like getting more proficient in DAWs and stuff like that. Basically,
which you've done beautifully.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's nice to have gone from like essentially nothing to being able to like produce and mix like commercially viable stuff. It's really cool, like how you chart that exponential progress over a couple of years. But that was the goal in lockdown, was to use the computer as a creative tool. Prior to that, if I was working on my own material, you'd write a song from top to bottom on the acoustic guitar, mm-hmm. and then go to a studio and record it with a band or with musicians or whatever it was. Or with the Alan Stone thing, a lot of what I was doing, I was like a reactionary artist. Alan would have like a couple of chords and a melody, and I would do something complementary to that, or Swati would bring in something. I rarely initiated an idea in that world, or just in my capacities as a guitar player, there would be a song that was written with outside writers and kind of produced with other people, and I would come in and make it sound like something that we would play, you know. So it was a very creative and fulfilling approach, but it had very little to do with kind of like what we're talking about now, like, you know, open up the laptop, using the computer mm-hmm. as a creative tool, getting to know the gear, getting some gizmos, fucking around with them. That wasn't a huge part of my process. But now, I would say generally speaking, it kind of now is sort of a little bit all over the map. I probably will write the whole song or like most of, you know, because if an idea can hold up on acoustic guitar or piano or something like that with just voice, chances are it's going to be a really good song. It's going to work live. It can take on kind of a life of its own in mm-hmm. different spaces. You know, sometimes I find if I'm creating really almost exclusively within the computer, then when you take it to perform, it can be like a real challenge, or you're actually like, oh man.
Yeah, like you have to actually learn the song an instrument to be performed
again. And it's not actually maybe super compelling live, or the melody is cool in the DAW because you're able to layer it up and put it through a bunch of shit and it sounds like very artsy and cool in the headphones. But like when you actually go to sing it with just you and an mm-hmm. acoustic and a microphone, there's not really a whole lot going on potentially. Not that that needs to be the destiny of everything that you write. Sometimes it's cool to just like blow it out and have like sonically just a great time. But my preference is to have music that I can kind of present in all kinds of different ways. And so, yeah, so like I'll usually take like more or less a finished idea and then sit down in the computer and start to kind of, Hank is right. He's out of shot, but he's down here. I'm giving him a scratch right now.
A little doggo. That's really interesting. I don't really think about that often because I'm the type of person that, you know, does take a guitar and fully form a song. And that's to do with, you know, my, the limit of skill that I have on, you know, production on DAWs and such,
mm-hmm.
but also because I'm really like technologically, challenged and I don't really enjoy being, you know, I don't know. Music always feels, I like when it feels like tangible, like when I can hold that in my hands and like write, you know, I still write with a journal and a pen and but it's interesting to think about how so many songwriters these days do kind of face that where they have to, you know, their music needs to be able to translate if they want to be a performer to the stage. And so sometimes they have to like reformat their songs.
Mm-hmm.
If
that's a priority, you know, like some people, it really just doesn't matter. And I will say too, all of these approaches aren't mutually exclusive. You know, it's great to write the lyrics out longhand in the journal and play it. Like I do that all the time. It's also wonderful mm-hmm. to have the option to be creative in all kinds of different ways. What I find for me that means is there's never really a dry day, because like if you pick up the guitar and you're just like, I'm just staring at a beige wall here, like this sucks. Then you say, okay, well, cool. I'm going to fire up a synth and just press a button and start clapping my hands mm-hmm. and go, oh, yeah, yeah. Or, you know, or I'm going to get like this, you know, I'm going to like take a fart.
Record sounds in my house.
I'm going to take a fart sample and put it through a fucking crystallizer or whatever dumb shit, you know? And
you farting into the mic.
Oh, I actually did that.
Cut to you farting in the mic.
I should
really?
It was a fart sample, to be fair. But yeah, like, you know, you pitch it around, you put it through some stuff.
It wasn't your own fart?
No, I can't do that to my microphones, my poor microphones. But you know, and then you pitch it around, it kind of sounds like a synth. It's weird. But anyway, the idea is to just, I find what brings me the most joy is to just be creative all the time and just kind of work.
Yeah.
And so it's nice now to have
whatever feels good.
Yeah. So it's nice to have options above and beyond just the acoustic guitar and just like a blank sheet of paper when it comes to writing songs, or just contributing mm-hmm. riffs in a very specific way to a project that kind of has its own chemistry and mojo going. So it's been really great knowing that you can really do no wrong provided that you kind of keep on moving forward with it.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I don't know a lot about your background in songwriting mm-hmm. aside from, you know, your songwriting in collaboration with the Alan Stone Band and your own stuff, you know, recently.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know, so I know that you're primarily a guitar player,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
correct?
Yeah.
But so for me, like I started writing songs when I was 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And I had a fascination with like writing, you know, from a very young age, and it just kind of continued and transformed into songwriting mm-hmm. as an adolescent.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious to know, when did your journey with songwriting actually begin? Like, do you remember the first moments of like, or writing your first song? How old were you? Where, like looking back, where did that actually start for you? When did you become a songwriter, quote unquote?
I think I kind of came to it fairly late, relatively. I sort of vaguely remember writing some songs when I was a teenager, but really, like when I started like really getting into guitar in high school, it was much more of just like
brush.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was like going to the gym with it. It was like an athletic event. So it was really just based on just building chops and fucking
shredding. As they say.
And yeah, exactly. Just being just an angry kid. But so it wasn't really until probably like 18, 19, early 20s that I really actually
attempted. That's not late.
Yeah, well, you know, no, totally. But it wasn't really until around there that I actually can remember like really writing songs that I was sort of like intentional about. And, you know, and that's when I kind of started to, you know, kind of put my own bands together. And then, you know, the Alan Stone Project started to kind of move and take off sort of around that time as well. So it was really sort of an I think it was the real, I mean, I was writing tunes and like I had like some failed bands and stuff before the Alan Stone thing, but it was really when that project started to become successful is when I think I really blossomed into really being a songwriter that I sort of, how I identify with that term and I'm kind of proud of the work that I'm doing. I think that the beautiful thing about, one of the many beautiful things about the Alan Stone Project is it was a really safe place to kind of be yourself and experiment and kind of grow into yourself. Cause we were all, you know, pretty green in a lot of ways and it was really taking off really fast and we were just kind of learning on the fly. And so I think that place that was safe to kind of learn how to be a musician, how to be a professional musician, how to be an artist, how to be myself on stage, how to look cool or not look cool and how all of it was fine. I think that was ultimately a catalyst for like, hey, I think I really want to share my own art and my own music in earnest. Because like in the bands that I had before the Alan Project took off, you know, we were ostensibly going for it, but like it was really just, there wasn't like a whole lot of conviction behind it. And so it's really been since 2016 where I'm just like, okay, let me just start really thinking about this being a legitimate outlet for what I want to do. Like something that I would really point at as something that is really a side of myself that I want to be out in the world and I'm proud of.
Right. Like this is me. This is my voice as a songwriter.
Yeah. So I think
How old were you when you started, like when you, I guess, started collaborating with Alan Stone?
Yeah, I mean that probably would have been like mid-20s. Somewhere kind of in there. And yeah, you know, it's great, like I said, to be part of something that's just, it has like a lot of cool momentum and no one really knows what they're doing. And and it just sort of,
it just... Do you feel like you know what you're doing now?
No, but like... Perfect. But I feel like I have a much more fully formed sense of self to where like I understand like the poignancy and like the power in not having a fucking clue what's going on.
Yes, and you can just unapologetically be yourself and there's no second guessing and...
Oh yeah, and but you know, but back then it was also like a rocket ship ride. So everyone was just kind of barely hanging on. Yeah. And it took a while to really kind of start to collaborate with Alan too, because a lot of those early songs had already been written and already been kind of fully fleshed out and stuff like that. A lot of the Brown record, the self-titled record, was already kind of like signed, sealed, delivered by the time the project was really touring and kind of out in the world and stuff. And then Radius was a little bit more collaborative, and then Building Balance was really something, you know, where we got together and had like a writing retreat in Alan's family's cabin and got together as a band at Sound Emporium here in Nashville and recorded a chunk of that record together, kind of live in the studio, which was a lot of fun. But the Alan records have always been kind of part that and part contributions from outside writers and producers and stuff. And then I would, you know, so even though I have helped write, you know, a bunch of tunes over the years, I would say my biggest job in that project was really helping to shape arrangements live. And that was really you know, I think what made the project special at the time was the live show and how we brought those songs to life on stage. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you find that now that you're working and releasing your own stuff, all of your songs that you've released are only written by you? Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. And so do you find that you prefer this format of writing? Do you miss the collaborative? I know that there are, I mean, you're still so collaborative in the way that you work. Like we mm-hmm. were talking about Justin, even collaborating with illustrators, collaborating with other instrumentalists. And, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like there's always, I'm learning about somebody new as you're posting on social media sharing new stuff. So it's still very much collaborative, but do you prefer writing in this format?
I think I love writing in all formats. I just think creating art is so cool. I think it kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier. If I really want, if I need to hear something in a certain way, or if I really want to hear something in a certain way, I'll just do it. So if I'm really feeling like I want to write a song from top to bottom, I'll just write a song from top to bottom. And then either do everything myself, or, you know, bring in a bass player I really love, or another other guitar mm-hmm. players I really love, or keyboard, whatever it is, I'll kind of start to build out from there.
But, so you really don't put yourself in a box. You're just like,
no,
anything goes.
And I think what I would what I'd love to do with songs that I'll release in the future, I would love to just kick, you know, just be like, hey, this song needs a bridge. I could write a bridge and it would be fine. But you could also write a bridge that I wouldn't think of.
Definitely don't come to me for bridge writing. Well, I am notorious for not including bridges in my songs because
the bridge
it's
is
funny. Like metaphorically, I can't cross the bridge to write the bridge.
You know,
I don't know. I'm not a bridge writer here. I actually, I actually bring in Justin sometimes to inspire me.
A lot of times for me, the bridge is the most exciting part of the song to write because
Justin feels the same too. I just
literally anything. Wow. Basically anything goes, so you can take and like it in this.
That's true.
On the Let Tears Be Diamonds EP, every song, the bridge is weird.
Yeah.
Really wacky. So
it, you definitely get very explorative with your production, and
it's fun, you know. So who knows?
It sounds fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. So who knows? Maybe for future tunes, I'll kind of kick some stuff out to other people. I think one of the things that I'm really trying to focus on now is not that everything has to be orgasmic and wonderful and joyful 24/7, but on balance, I would rather have it be that than this angsty Kurt Cobainian kind of nonsense, you know? So I'm really trying to pay attention to that as I'm creating stuff. How am I feeling? And if I'm feeling overwhelmed, if I'm feeling like the walls are kind of closing in a little bit, if I just need other people, I need there to be fresh energy. I need it to feel a little bit more collaborative. Just get people involved. Like, it's fine, you know?
Yeah.
That's
why it's better that way. It's more fun.
Yeah. Or if you need to really just finish a song yourself, do that too.
Yeah. You know, I think some songs are so deeply personal. Like, you know, every songwriter is different. And I've written many songs that are, you know, have nothing to do with me and just were inspired by a word or a line that came to mind. And I created a story in my head or what have you, or they're just abstract lyrics that don't actually mean anything. But there are some songs that are so deeply personal that it kind of feels invasive to bring people into the process.
Sure.
But, you know, that's just those songs in my opinion.
Oh, I agree. And I have those songs too. And those are songs that you won't really see other people's touches in them so much. But then there are a lot of other tunes. I mean, I seldom know what any of these songs are about anyway, but there are other tunes where it's clear to me, even though I don't know what the fuck the song's about, I know that it is not coming from a particularly deep personal place.
Yeah.
So I may be willing, I tend not to collaborate lyrically so much, but I would be much more receptive to someone else bringing in some textures or some parts or maybe, or maybe some, even though I haven't really collaborated on the writing side of it with the solo material on the stuff that's out so far, I'd be more willing on, maybe on some of the less personal stuff to bring someone in. Just be like, hey man, like I could do a thing here, but I don't want to do a thing here. Would you do a thing here?
Yeah, but I love that. I really love that approach to it. And I think that I'm learning the more that I write and release songs, I'm learning how much I need those experiences.
Because
it can really become stale, and especially being a solo artist, like not writing with a band and releasing songs as a band, it can really become stale. And you know, we all have our songwriting habits that we kind of fall back on, and you know, it's fun to bring people in that bring something to your music that might not have been created otherwise.
Right. No, absolutely. And that's why, again, it's been really fun working with Justin, because I think like the visual side of it is an extension of kind of what we're talking about, where I'll send him a song and I'll be like, oh, this is yet another song written by a depressed asshole. Stop. And it's just sad and blah, blah, blah.
He's creating a world for you.
Well, that's what's so cool.
For it's your music to exist in.
I'm either sending stuff to him or I'm sending stuff to Sigmund Washington, this incredible stop motion animator in New York.
And so cool.
And they're sending stuff back to me that's vibrant and colorful and dynamic. And that's what they're getting out of the music.
And it's really interesting because it's a reflection of you, because that's your music.
Which is such a relief, because I'm just like, Jesus Christ, I thought, I really had the knives out on this one, you know, and people are hearing it. And I mean, in particular, like that song Madeline, you know, it's like, God, I thought this song was pretty fucking sad. And it turns out that there's like a whole lot more depth to it that with all these tunes, there's a whole lot more depth to it that if I'm just in my studio working on them, I'm not capable of unlocking that. But if other people are involved in the same way, like the song Once in Future Queen is an example of this, where I played the acoustic guitar on that and I sang the lead vocal. Everything else is other people. There's like Matt Musty from Train is playing the drums and singing BGVs with his wife. My buddy Bram in upstate New York's playing the piano. This incredible guitarist MD in LA, Drew Tabenfeld, is playing like pedal steel and electric stuff. My buddy Alex Bichari here is playing electric. All these other people.
That's amazing.
Their interpretation.
And it still sounds like you, and it's still your song.
Well, and it's their interpretation of the music that, again, like that song, again, it's just a yet another sad fucking song written by a sad white guy. But like in the hands of brilliant people, it becomes this prismatic, like multifaceted thing, which is such a relief as a creative person to see that and hear that interpretation. Because you're like, oh, I'm not such a miserable sack of crap after all. This is great.
It's so interesting to me because you're saying like all these sad songs written by a sad white guy.
Which
and
is true.
I know that there are some songs like Lover I Can't seems a little more melancholy to me.
Sad song by a sad white guy. Yep.
But I don't look at your music. When I listen to your music, I don't hear it as sad. And maybe that's like you're saying, it becomes more dynamic as you know, bring more collaborators into your work, but also the sound of your music, like the overall sonic palette that you've created as Trevor Larkin, doesn't sound sad to me. It sounds like maybe bittersweet, but I don't know. There's just like this, I don't know, especially with this new album, it's like wall of sound kind of.
Yeah.
Which I love. I remember when I heard the song Play on Words.
Oh, yeah.
I heard it before the album was released, obviously, because Justin was listening to it. But I remember he was so excited about the song. And, you know, you send him songs all the time. And so sometimes I'll just hear it in the background as he's working. Mm-hmm. And he won't, like, specifically show it to me. But this song, he was like, you got to listen to Trevor's new song. Like, listen to this song. We were driving, and he was like, I'm going to put Trevor's song on because you have to hear it. And we both were in... we were probably just driving to get snacks or something, but...
It's a great reason to drive.
That's usually the only reason why we drive.
Yeah.
Probably driving to get snacks at 7 p.m. because there's none in the house. But he was so excited about the song, which made me so excited, and also so excited for you as a friend.
Thanks.
But then as we were driving, I just remember hearing it and being like, this sounds like Trevor. Like, this is you. And from what I know about you as a person and an artist and, you know, influenced by, you know, Rush and Metallica and Coldplay.
Sure.
But it was like that all song the cool specifically.
Kid bands. All the cool kid bands.
Just shredding. But that song specifically, listening to it, it was just you immediately. And it's interesting because it's so like, the production is so piercing. You know, it even has that like, guitar part.
I mean,
and it was just like, you know, cymbals in the chorus, like just crazy, like pretty, rhythm and.
I think a buddy said it's like the song has teeth. The mix has teeth.
It does have teeth. And it's so cool. And like contrasting to like working with Alan Stone and in contrast also to your older stuff that you've released. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know. There's something about that song specifically that I was like, this is Trevor. This is what he's hiding deep in his heart and soul.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I like that song a lot too. You know, it's basically that song is like all the like, it's just got caveman riffs and just fun like guitar driven stuff, just as you said, wall of guitars, cool
it
guitar harmonies,
meadly me. It sounds like you're having fun.
It's big melodies. It's just kind of like all the stuff that you wouldn't necessarily bring to the table creatively in like a Pitchfork approved type of project. It's, you know, just dumb caveman riffs that I play for fun and just put them in a song. It's a beautiful thing about doing your own thing is it can really be anything you want it to be. And, you know, I hope that, I mean, everything that I've done in my career across the board has either been a slow build or has ended up not being the thing itself, but has been the catalyst for opening up the door to a new opportunity. So I'm curious, I'm curious to see if and when and how that song kind of finds its way in the world. Because I do think it's cool, but it just, in today's world, unless something goes viral because of some like dumb reason why a thing goes viral, it just,
you just
takes,
need to like create a TikTok dance it for just, it.
Yeah, you know, which is like, no one's, again, sad white guy, no one's gonna believe like my fucking TikTok dance, you know. But yeah,
I'd
you know,
love it, to see you doing a TikTok dance in your bedroom.
It's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen. That would be creepy. But you know, everything just takes time to develop and find an audience and find fresh ears. Yeah. And I hope that song does though, because it is really cool.
And it's authentic. Like, you know, and it's gonna reach people that's the thing that they like.
Yeah.
You know? It reminds me of, I don't know, there's just some sort of like, I guess there's an angst that's kind of hidden deep inside of me from middle school that I don't really indulge in often, but it reminds me of like listening to like Marianas Trench and like Green Day.
Hell yeah.
And Fall Out Boy in middle school. Yeah. And that song is just that for me when I listen to it. So it's very indulgent, and I mean my little like folk singer-songwriter kind of thing. But I do have this like very weird, rich history in music listening that doesn't really come out very often, and that song just sparked something inside of me.
Right.
Just because of its pure power, I think.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I mean,
it will find the ears that need to listen to it.
You should write just a fucking fun, thrashy thing. I mean, why not?
Oh my gosh, people would be losing their minds.
In a good way. In a good way.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah, absolutely.
I think
forge my own path.
I mean, all that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, the trial and error part of it. I think for me, as it is for you, as it is for, I think, most really committed and great creative people, we tend not to be specialists, really. There's no one genre, there's no one category. It just is us, you know, and we're all multifaceted creatures, you know. So yeah, like put out the punk rock song, put out the industrial song, put out the prog tune, like who cares, you know. It's especially with the way that we're kind of able to share music now, it's like kind of anything goes. And I mean, like with the Let Tears Be Diamonds EP, that's been both a subject of praise and criticism about the EP, is that it's a weird body of work.
How is that criticism?
I think it's only really criticism offered.
Are you criticizing it yourself?
No, I'm not. I like it. But I think it's mostly people on like the inside of the business who's just like, well, we just don't know what to do with it. And like, cool.
Right.
I'm not asking.
The teams, as we said before.
Yeah, like I'm not asking you to do anything with it. I'm not asking any, at this stage, I recognize that where I'm at in my artistry with this iteration of like what I'm doing, it has nothing to do with analytics or metrics or numbers. Like I'm figuring it out, you know? So like,
nor
I'm not,
should it really, realistically.
Yeah, I mean, right. I think it's all that stuff is fine. I think you just kind of got to be like honest about where you're at just as a person. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel good and I'm inspired to continue doing this and be prolific if I'm, you know, making art and sharing it with intention in a way that's interesting to me. We're all beholden to these weird kind of algorithmic shifts and like decisions by kooky, spectrumy billionaires and stuff like that. And that's fine. But it's not a way to live your life, is to wake up and figure out how you're going to game the system.
It's not inspiring.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's just not a way that I really want to do it. I'm not like anti-numbers or anything like that, but I think the core of where it's coming from has to be more pure and intentional than that. And that's really kind of the point of this project. So if I have industry people tell me that they don't know what to do with it, it's like, cool, go and get Kane Brown his catering. Like, that's fine. You know, I'm not asking, you know, when the time is right, it would be wonderful to speak to some teams, quote unquote, or like maybe get some help or some additional input. But now it's just not that time. I'm just not at that point with this thing. And
I think that at the core of it, it's just finding your people, you know, without the teams. It's like I said, it's you're creating authentic music, and that's the core of what all music should be.
It is.
People are going to find it. And those are the people that you want to be listening to your music.
And again, like we were talking about earlier, nothing that has happened to me or that I've ever done in my career has been if A, then B, and if B, then C. I never set out to join what would become like a really successful R&B project. Mm-hmm. I started subbing for my buddy in the house band at a venue called the Sea Monster. And we just, as a thing to do, because I was a sad white guy, you know, and that became the jam session that was the catalyst for that Alan Stone project kind of coming together, like that first touring iteration of the thing. I had no aspirations to play soul music at that time. It was just a thing to fuck around with on a Sunday night. You know, you mentioned the daily email newsletter I used to write, and you know, the intention of that is like, oh, people will like really become invested in the newsletter. That there were a solid number of subscribers, but like the newsletter didn't take off, but it was the catalyst for like, oh, well, the writing chops are there. So now there's some other opportunities to write some essays and some articles and kind of contribute in that way. And in the same...
And like a way to hold yourself accountable creatively.
All of that, you know.
Just so, internally within yourself.
And so given how my career has unfolded, you know, the intention maybe would be for this music to be successful in its own right and find a big audience. I can virtually guarantee you that's not going to happen. What's going to happen is it's going to be the lead domino for something that I have no idea what that thing is yet. And that will that'll become the interesting door to walk through. I mean, that's just always how it's been for me.
Yeah. And you know, the cool thing, I talk to Justin about this often, as we become, you know, pity party people in regards to like numbers and analytics and releases and you know, as artists, I think we're always gonna be hard on ourselves. Like, that's part of being a creative person. But we often have to remind ourselves, like, this music that we create and share is going to exist indefinitely. Like, it's going to exist far beyond the extent of our lives. And a beautiful part of that I have found in finding musicians and bands and artists is going back in their discography and listening to their stuff. So, you know, anything can happen. And at the heart of it, it's, I wrote these songs. This is a part of me. I'm sharing it with people, and they're just going to exist, know, indefinitely. And I think that that's a beautiful thing. And so
absolutely,
they can be found by anyone at any time. I mean, that's the beauty of the internet
as well. Anyone at any time. And, you know, release week is like a nanosecond of a song or an album's lifespan.
So much pressure we put on ourselves.
Yeah. And, you know, you do learn kind of a lot about yourself and where the motivations come from. Like, I know for myself, like, I love to do the work. I love to make stuff.
I can tell.
It's not that I don't care about numbers, because I do care about numbers. It sure is nice if a lot of people see something or a lot of people listen. It sure is nice to know that there are ears on the other end of that Spotify artist thing or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
It sure is nice to have those things. But I know artists, as I'm sure you do too, where that's the motivation. That's what they chase. And mm-hmm. I've never been that way. The thing that gives me the most joy is just making stuff. And so, you know, my approach to all of the stuff we're talking about, or maybe social media or other these, or, you know, other things like that, it's based entirely to the consternation maybe of like marketing people or social media managers and stuff. I really am only interested right now in just making stuff that I feel good about, whether it gets 2 likes or 22,000 likes. It does mm-hmm. not matter. I'm learning how to be an artist in this fresh iteration of myself. And personally, it's very, I know there are people where they can use those numbers and it's useful information and they can kind of start to sculpt. It is not useful information for me right now. It's actually a distraction. Mm-hmm. I'm circling around who I am, finding my voice, the trial and error thing. I'm incapable of going, if A, then B, then C. I have to just go, well, yeah. And then kind of react in real time to that and learn. So, and that's really how the Let Tears Be Diamonds thing kind of came together. It sounds like that trial and error that kind of coalesced itself around a really unique body of work. And that's the cool thing about it, which maybe will gain life over time, is there really is no, and I don't say this as like a self-congratulatory thing, but there's nothing that sounds like it.
And no, that's true.
It is really, for better or worse, really unique music.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that as a fan of yours and your music, knowing your past releases as well, I think it really, to me, is a symbol of like a new chapter of Trevor Larkin.
Very much so.
Because it does, like, you know, the common thread of your voice as an artist and songwriter definitely is heard in the album, but it also feels different in a way. And it feels like more exploratory, and like all these things that you're saying is like, you know, you just want to make things and create. Yeah. It's like, I can hear that in listening. And it's really interesting to, and also as a producer, because it's all self-produced. And like you're saying, like after the lockdown, having all these, you know, new discoveries about yourself as a producer and engineer, as well as a songwriter, it feels different to me in a really good way.
Thanks. Yeah. It feels much more like me than anything else that I've done, which you know, you would expect, but like, that's also kind of the point. And it's nice to, again, just know it's another way that I can contribute and be creative and maybe sort of be of service. Maybe it would be, you know, I'm starting to help a lot more people out with their records and stuff like that too. So it's nice to have developed those chops or developed that voice.
That's great.
In other, you know, sort of aspects of what we do or other bits of technology or whatever the case might be. So that's fun
that's
too.
Great.
That's like another outlet. That's another door that could potentially open a little bit wider. So
that's
so
amazing.
We'll see. You know, it's everything for me. Again, it's always just been a constant evolution. Nothing's ever really made sense. Nothing has been particularly linear. And so this
I kind of love that.
This EP being out is just an extension of that. So I'm just as curious as anyone else what it's going to mean. But, you know, but there's already a fresh batch of songs that's getting put together, and that it's sort of, I've always been kind of on to the next thing.
That's a really good way to be, I think. Always moving forward.
Yeah.
So I'll ask you one last question.
Sure.
And I am hoping to ask this as, you know, to end the podcast with all my guests, but because I think it's really interesting to reflect on and talk about, but as a songwriter specifically, what is one piece of advice that you would give your past self or somebody who, you know, is just starting out in their journey as a songwriter? And what is one piece of advice that you want to give to yourself moving forward?
Oh, gosh.
As a songwriter?
Those are great
a lot
questions.
Of pressure.
I'm always hesitant I mean, I'm going to answer the question as best I can, but I'm always hesitant.
It can be as silly as you want.
I'm always hesitant to be the person who gives advice because, like I said,
well, you're just giving it to yourself.
It's a very real time journey for me. And maybe mm-hmm. that is, maybe that's something I would tell my younger self, is that, you know, no one really knows what's happening or what's going on. So it's okay, like, maybe go out tonight and get shit-faced and get into a little trouble, you know?
Go to funky, what was it called?
Funky good time.
Funky good time.
Dance to some cool-ass music and just, and just like kind of relax and be a person. The Alan Stone Project really taught me that too. It's just like, just be flawed and, but within that, be beautiful and be yourself and kind of,
right.
And, you know, songwriting is wonderful and it's a precious endeavor and pursuit, and but it is also ultimately just a song. It's okay to write shitty music. It's okay to not know what the hell's going on, but just, you know, just be a person and make mistakes. I think mm-hmm. when I was younger, and I still struggle with this a little bit, but I definitely had delusions of grandeur when I was younger and felt like I had to present this illusion of perfection or being in control, and that's just mm-hmm. such a waste of time. And so I would definitely tell my younger self to just loosen up and eat a cheeseburger and play some video games and, like, it's okay. It's going to be all right. And
that then, is great advice.
And then I think advice maybe in general for songwriters would, I think above and beyond just like putting in the work and stuff like that, would probably be to like have a life outside of writing. Be in the world, see people, mm-hmm. go climb, go do stuff with people who aren't in our world, and like have a story to tell, like participate in what's yeah. happening. I feel like there's a tendency for us to kind of retreat inward, and we can kind of lose the forest for the trees, at least I do. So yeah. it's wonderful to just kind of be out in the world and be and to be replenished and well socialized and all these things, I think, make for like a more comprehensive and a more cohesive creative statement and a much more like functional relationship with the thing that we do. And then what was the third part of what
there was
the third
two. Question?
It was just two?
There was just two.
See, I'm so delusional.
But if you have anything
I
else,
invented
please.
A third part of this question because I'm so up my own ass. No, that was the third question.
It could be what advice would you give yourself right now? Because we did past, future.
Well, the advice that I would give myself right now is just continue to work because you know that you love working and you feel good when you work, but also to prioritize joy, not mm-hmm. as an excuse to stop working, but if you, you know, if I start feeling angry, if I start feeling overwhelmed, if I'm stuck, oh, I'm shitty. Oh, what's the point? Yeah. No one loves me, you know? Go, yeah. like I said, go eat a cheeseburger. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine.
That is, you know? Such good advice, honestly. And I'm learning that the older I get is prioritizing joy is, you know, yeah. You won't go anywhere right. if you don't prioritize joy.
You know, and it's absolutely right. And sometimes it's a crazy 18-hour marathon session of like pure creative ecstasy. Other times it's like a line or
yeah.
a thing in a gizmo that's kind of cool. But I realize now, I feel like so many people place so much emphasis on like the, like I was said earlier, like the orgasmic element of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all part of the same continuum, whether you chip away mm-hmm. at the thing, whether it comes instantly. People say that, oh, the best songs are the ones that arrive in 10 minutes. That's, in my opinion, not necessarily true. They all come from the same place. Mm-hmm. They all come from you.
The best songs are the best songs.
The best songs are the best songs. Sometimes they take 20 years to write. The important thing that I tell myself now is to just, you like being creative all the time, so be creative all the time. You don't have to write Hey Jude every time you sit down, but but you do need to sit down and do the work, not because you owe that to anyone else, but because you are objectively happier and right. more joyful and kinder when
yes.
you give this side of yourself room to roam free.
Yes, and you do owe it to yourself to prioritize your joy, because what's the point in living? What's the point in creating otherwise? But I also really do love the you know, go out and live your life. It's something that I have reflected on many times throughout my life and, you know, career is we put so much pressure on ourselves to just do the thing always. You know, the other day I was even just driving around running errands, and I was overcome with this like very overwhelming feeling of guilt that I wasn't writing a song at that moment, that I wasn't creating or doing something more productive, you know, for myself as an artist. And it's interesting that we don't often let ourselves just live our lives. Because if we don't, what would we have to write about, you know?
Yeah. What would we have to write about? Will we have like the presence and fortitude to access the parts of ourselves where those songs are born? You know, it again, it's all part of the same continuum. And I really appreciate that as I've matured as a creative person or matured in my life and career. And, you know, I'm at that point in my life too, where I realize that I'm in it for the long haul. This is a long play. And so what's a way that I can keep doing this all the time? I've burnt out before many times. I've done the crazy, you know, the world tours and the 300 shows a year and all of this, you know, major blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I know what it's like to redline, and I've seen that feel really good and then become abundantly unsustainable and kind of crash. And then I've seen it kind of come up again. I'm really looking to find that consistency where I can be authentically myself creatively, and also appreciate that there are people around me who care about me, who don't give a fuck that I play guitar, don't give a shit that I write songs. They just like me because, hey, like, you're a good person and we enjoy your presence in the room.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And so, like, have some chocolate chip cookies and
and chill
and watch The Matrix or whatever it is, you know, like, it's okay. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, you're not defined by your art. You are also who you are, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Hopefully some of this
really
is usable.
I appreciate it. I loved it all. You are, every time I talk with you, I'm just blown away at the way that your mind works, and you're very eloquent.
Oh, well, hopefully you can edit, you can edit out some of the likes as I say those over and over again.
No. So please tell everyone how they can support you, where they can find you, what you want people to do.
You know, all of the usual...
Other than eat a cheeseburger.
Sure. I mean, all the usual platforms. In terms of social media, what I'm most active on is probably Instagram. That's just at Trevor Larkin. But if you go to trevorlarkin.com, you can link to all of the social media platforms. They're all right there.
Beautiful.
You know, Spotify, Amazon, Apple, it's all just my name. A great way to support me is to subscribe to the newsletter, which is no longer daily, but it's just kind of more of a standard newsletter now. That's called A Mind of a Trevor. You can go to trevorlarkin.com and subscribe there. That's the best way to really kind of gain insights into what I'm up to and get, you know, such as it's worth, like exclusive content and stuff like that. There is a Patreon page, but I'm not active on that yet. That'll come next year, but that is available as well. But I would say Instagram is cool, the website is cool, and subscribe to the newsletter. That's really helpful for me.
Beautiful. And also listen to Trevor's new album, Let Tears Be Diamonds, which is out now everywhere.
Out now.
My favorites are the first two tracks, personally, but...
Alone to Choose and Play on Words are really cool. I think my personal favorite is the last track, Shadows and Distance.
Really? I do love the B section, the random section at the end. So do listen to the entire album so that you can get to about 2 or 3 minutes into the last track to hear the special surprise.
They're all cool. They're all cool. Just fucking listen to them, you know?
I do. I also wanted to tell you my favorite line, I think, from the whole album. My favorite lyric is, I'm not asking for much. All I'm asking is for time alone. Which is, I don't know, it's just hilarious to me, because I you know, personally, I just live in a very small space with my husband, and we all need our time alone. It's just so specific. It's like, I'm not asking for much. All I'm asking is for time alone to choose specifically. But
maybe that line just speaks to our just being inundated by information and sort of existing in our phones all the time and stuff like that. We all just kind of need just time to eat that. Eat that proverbial cheeseburger, you know, just be a person. Just time away from
just
it.
Just to be a person. Eat time a cheeseburger, be a person.
Yeah, there we
go. That's great advice from Trevor Larkin.
That's the title. That's the title of the podcast right there. Eat a cheeseburger.
Eat a cheeseburger.
Eat a cheeseburger, be a person. Exactly.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Trevor.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to talk to you.